News. And right now it's Wednesday and time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
With midterm elections less than 3 weeks away and counting, the parties reassess their pocketbooks and reshuffle funds to the tightest races. A federal investigation of Congressman Kurt Weldon could put Pennsylvania's 7th district into Democratic hands. Plus, Democrat Mark Warner, better known as the anti-Hillary, bows out of the 2008 presidential race. As always, an update on the hot contests around the country. Is there a big race in your state or district? What political stories are you following this week? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Ken Rudin has returned from his week-long hiatus from the Political Junkie. He's NPR's political editor. You can read his Political Junkie column at npr.org, a new column just up a few minutes ago, and you can catch his podcast on our website, npr.org. Ken, any media you're ignoring this week?
I'll be at CVS in Gaithersburg, Maryland on Friday night.
Let's begin in Pennsylvania, the 7th district there. What do we know about the federal investigation of Congressman Kurt Weldon?
Well, again, this is politically, it's a big Republican seat. Kurt Weldon has never had a tough race, but the FBI announced, or there's some kind of announcement, that they're they raided his daughter's offices, Kurt Weldon's daughter. The allegation is that Kurt Weldon, Pennsylvania Republican, has steered government contracts to help his daughter. He denies it. He said it's not true at all, but it's become obviously a big issue nationally because the Republicans are already under this culture of corruption thing that Democrats are trying to talk about, and it hurts him in Pennsylvania as well.
We have a call on this question. Robert's calling us from Philadelphia.
Yes, on that topic, I guess I was curious on your ideas on how much this would hurt, and more generally on whether the timing is going to help Mr. Weldon at all, with the sense that around Philadelphia, these things always seem to be timed very close to election time, these FBI investigations.
And Mr. Weldon certainly did raise questions about the timing, but this is a federal investigation, isn't it, Ken?
Well, yeah, both sides have to make that case. Yes, it's a federal investigation, but why 2-3 weeks right before the election? It reminds a lot of Republicans about, you know, the fact that George Bush was arrested for drunk driving in 1976, but it came out like 5 days before the 2000 election. So Republicans are suspicious about last-minute charges, but the point is the FBI is not part of a political organization. It's part of a federal investigation.
Robert, thanks very much for the call. Are the Republicans standing behind Weldon?
Well, they are. They really don't know what to think. But again, this is another Republican seat that a few weeks ago was not thought to be in jeopardy at all. But now it's another, just like Don Sherwood, another Republican in Pennsylvania who's now running ads about the fact that he apologized for strangling his girlfriend, you know, Mr. Sherwood.
He apologized for the affair. He didn't apologize for strangling because he said it didn't happen.
That's true. But in other words, there's a bunch of more House Republicans that were adding to a list that it looked like a few months ago, or maybe the Democrats would get 15 seats, but more and more Republicans are on this vulnerable seat. Kurt Weldon is now one of them. There are now 4 seats in Pennsylvania alone, 4 Republican-held seats that are now considered a toss-up at best.
At the same time, Republicans say, look, it's not just us. What about the Democratic leader in the United States Senate, the senator from Nevada?
Right, and Harry Reid, whatever he did, he's not up for re-election next year. A lot of Republicans are trying to tie their Democratic opponents to Harry Reid, but one, we're not really sure what Harry Reid did other than failing to file on a profit thing. It's not like a corruption case, but again, it's too soon to say what's going to happen with that.
Now, as we enter the home stretch of this election season, both Republicans and Democrats are redirecting some of their party's funds tactically, moving some away from races that were previously competitive and into races that are suddenly competitive. To tell us more, we're joined now by Sheila Krumholz, the acting director of the Center for Responsive Politics, and she's been kind enough to come and join us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And let's start with the Republicans. The New York Times said the GOP was pulling out of the Ohio Senate race. RNC Chair Ken Mellman says they're not. Who's right?
Well, it sounds like they're putting in some money, but not as much as they could, and certainly not as much as DeWine. Senator DeWine would like them to put in. But this is now a race that is called Democratic-leaning, something mm-hmm. that would have been unheard of to think of just a few short weeks ago. So DeWine joins Santorum and Chafee as the underdogs, which is, again, just adding to the list that you were discussing previously about how surprising, how quickly fortunes change.
Can you gauge from where the parties send or pull out money whether they have, in fact, given up on, for example, Max Baucus, the Republican senator in Montana?
Conrad Burns.
Conrad Burns. Excuse me. Thank you. That's why he's here. You know, he's good, the information otherwise. Anyway, and Lincoln Chafee, I got that right, in Rhode Island?
Right. Well, unfortunately, we as watchdogs on the money are always kind of hamstrung by the reporting deadlines. And so, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see exactly where the money goes in the 11th hour until well after the election. But we do know that these dollars that go in at the end can be critical for taking advantage of late-breaking opportunities and for the Democrats for nailing that majority in the few races they absolutely need to get.
Mm-hmm. And as you look at patterns, what can you derive from what you see?
Well, what we're seeing is what we've heard all year, and that is that the Democrats are having a schism at the top in their strategy, in agreement. The DNC and Dean is arguing with Manuel and Schumer, chairs of the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional and the Senatorial Campaign Committees, about how they should strategize during this final push. And it sounds like there is they're feeling the heat and not able to direct the money in a kind of cohesive way, in the same way that the Republicans have done for so long.
In other words, the chairs of the congressional campaign committees and the senatorial campaign committees want to say, let's send all the money to this seat that we can win, or this state where we can win a Senate seat, as opposed to Howard Dean, the chairman of the party, who says we've got to build the party structure up in states where we have virtually vanished as a political institution, so we can battle not just this year but in the years ahead.
Right, and this is a bad time to be struggling with these decisions. I mean, those should have been strategized long ago.
As opposed to 3 weeks before Election Day. Ken?
Back to the Ohio Senate race. There was a lot of head-scratching in Washington over that New York Times story that the Republicans were pulling out. If Mike DeWine loses in Ohio, and it looks like he will lose in Ohio, it's not because of money. The political climate, as you know, is just awful for the Republicans there. DeWine has a big financial lead over the Democratic nominee, Sherrod Brown, so it's not because of money. But what I thought was interesting is that how money... We were talking about the Virginia Senate race a while ago, and even though George Allen kept tripping over his own mouth and own words, everybody kept saying, well, Jim Webb is not getting the money. But since the Makaka incident, since Allen's, you know, various missteps, a lot of money has come into to Jim Webb's campaign. Matter of fact, I think in the last quarter, he has raised as much money as George Allen. Allen probably has more now, but money seems to be attracted to winners or perceived winners. And if the Democrats are perceived to either winning the House, which they could do, and coming close to winning the Senate, then the money will go that way, and that's what seems to be happening.
Here's an email question we got from Jason in Vancouver, Washington. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal today that mentioned that money doesn't seem to be helping Republicans as much this year as it has helped the incumbents in the past. Are there races that are impervious to money this year? Is funding less important than issues, or am I being naive? Sheila Krumholz, what do you think?
Money is always a critical factor, but it is never the only factor. You also need to have a good campaign organization, name recognition, campaign skills. And in this cycle in particular, a scandal can eject you from the lineup very quickly. So that isn't the case, I think, with Allen. He's had a lot of missteps, and the personal financial disclosure, the lack of disclosure of options at a couple of companies on which he sat on their board was just another one in a long list. So that it isn't one issue that happened there, but it's enough for the DNC to take out a loan, a line of credit for sending some last-minute dollars toward the VA race.
And Ken, we were talking last week when we were in Ohio with the vice chair of the Republican National Committee, who points out money really helps with those get-out-the-vote efforts that were so crucial to Republicans in 2004 and that they hope to duplicate this year.
That's right. It can pay for enthusiasm, and we don't know how enthusiastic the Republican base will be, but it can produce the kind of organizations that if they can get out the vote, the money will help.
Sheila Krumholz, thanks very much for being with us today. Appreciate your time to come in.
Thank you.
Sheila Krumholz is the acting executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics. She was with us here in Studio 3A. And let's see if we can get some more callers on the line. This is Amy. Amy's calling us from Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Hi.
Hi.
I was curious what you guys thought about the Kane Menendez race here in New Jersey, because, I mean, New Jersey often goes Republican, often goes Democrat, and it's been a really tight race here.
Ken?
Well, that's a great state to talk about money, because it's a very expensive media market. You have to pay for New York TV and Philadelphia TV in the South, so you have to have a lot of money. Bob Menendez, the appointed Democratic incumbent, has a far bigger financial advantage over the Republican Tom Kane Jr. Kane, of course, has the name, the magic name, and the Republican.
Exactly, yeah.
And the Republican Party is spending more money on it. But I think that even though the Republicans were hopeful this was going to be the seat they were going to pick up, I think Menendez is starting to pull ahead. Tom Kane has called for the resignation of Speaker Dennis Hastert. He's called for the resignation of Defense Secretary Rumsfeld. You wonder if he's trying to reach out to more and more moderates, and if that's the case, then conservative Republicans may say, why show up if Kane is going to be no different than Menendez?
Well, yeah, New Jersey, I mean, a Republican might as well be a Democrat anywhere else in the country.
And as you well know, no Republican has been elected to the Senate from New Jersey since 1972.
Oh, I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah. Stick with me,
Ken. Knows.
Stick with me.
Amy, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We're talking to our political junkie, NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller. This will be Greg. Greg's with us from Burlington, North Carolina.
Hi, good afternoon. What a wonderful show, as usual. It's
thank you.
A couple of weeks before the election, and it's very entertaining, very educational.
Even with Ken Rudin on
despite
it.
Despite Ken.
Yeah.
I was wondering, pretty much a candidate, Brad Miller, a Democrat congressman from North Carolina, he's pretty much a strong candidate. He's running against Vernon Robinson, what he calls himself, the Black Jesse Helms. And I think there's a lot of money going into his campaign from out of state, very similar to Catherine Harris in Florida. I was wondering what you thought about whether or not the National Republican Party is backing him financially, and what do you see about that particular race?
Vern Robinson is a very, very controversial candidate. To say he's a Black Jesse Helms is really understating his appeal. He's really come up with some extreme ads, extreme positions, and it's not a seat at all that the Republican Party thinks they could win. So I think Brad Miller seems to be pretty safe in that district. It's not on anybody's list. But, you know, you mentioned Catherine Harris in Florida. Greg Allen, our correspondent in Florida, just sent me a note that she just announced that she's selling her house in Washington to put the money towards her campaign. She's talking about spending the $10 million that she's going to defeat Bill Nelson in Florida. I think the real reason she's selling her house in Washington is she's going to be soon moving back to Florida.
Greg, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Email, this is from Dave in Madison, Wisconsin. The Chicago Tribune reported on October 8th that the contest for the 8th Congressional District in northeastern Wisconsin has become the record holder for total money spent in a midterm election, now over $3.2 million just on TV advertising. So is there a leader in this contest?
Well, it's a Republican seat. That's the one that Mark Green, the Republican nominee for governor, is giving up. And John Gard is the Speaker of the Speaker of the Assembly in Wisconsin. And the Republicans should hold it, but I think there's a lot of Democratic money going into that race, and Democrats seem to be pretty hopeful that they'll take it. My guess is that the Republicans hold on to the seat.
Let's go to Joanne. Joanne is driving to Kansas City.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I had a question. You're talking about all these Republicans that are in danger of losing seats. Are there Democrats, you know, be it governors, senators, House of Representatives, that are in danger of losing their seat?
Well, I love that question, because every time in the past we've seen big Democratic victories, 1982, 1974, 1964, there are still Democratic incumbents who go down to defeat. Even if it's just one or two members, Democrats go down. It looks like right now, if the election were held right now, not one Democratic member of the Senate or the House is going to lose his or her seat. And that includes open seats as well. It seems like the Republican Party has once upon a time talked about going after Democratic seats like John Barrow in Georgia or, Jim Marshall of Georgia or winning the Ted Strickland seat.
What about Debbie Stabenow?
Again, that was a seat that the Republicans wanted from the beginning. Debbie Stabenow, Maria Kent.
Michigan.
Right. Jennifer Granholm in Michigan. But again, the Democrats seem to have found their footing. And again, if there is a Democratic wave, and that seems to be the sense out there. Again, there could be a last-minute Republican get-out-the-vote effort, as we saw in 2004. But if there is a Democratic wave, and it seems to be going that way, more and more Republicans seem to be pulling back and trying to defend what they have rather than going after Democratic seats.
What about the fact, too, that, I think it's the last two elections, the polls were really not very accurate.
Well, if we're talking about exit polls, that was certainly the case. A lot of people thought that John Kerry had the election won because they relied on early exit polls. But you know, look, there's a difference between exit polls and some kind of determination of how to decide what those
key... Stephen Zogby, and I'm part of his online polling network. I think even Zogby missed it.
Well, Zogby does have the Democrats up far more than many, many analysts see it. But again, if it's a Democratic wave, who knows what's going to happen?
Joanne, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we just have a few seconds left, but Democrat Mark Warner, former governor of Virginia, announced he would not be running for president in 2008. He wants to spend more time with his family. That's what they always say. Should we believe him?
Well, let's not look for a scandal. We have enough scandals to worry about. But everybody says that, you know, this is really bad news for the Democratic Party, that the only way they were going to win with a centrist like Mark Warner, you know, somebody who appeals to the South. But if you look at the voters who come out to vote in the Democratic caucuses and primaries, they're not moderate conservative voters. Look what happened in Connecticut this year. There was so much anger about the war that it's really the left, the anti-war left that comes out. So I'm not convinced. We always talked about how good Mark Warner was, how smart he was, how ambitious he was, and how much of an organization he had. I'm not convinced that if his voters are the ones who come out and vote in the caucuses and primaries.
Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us every Wednesday. You can also read his column at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It is beautiful.